Welcome to Pillow Voices, a production of Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival, with content from the Pillow Archives. I'm Norton Owen, the Pillow's Director of Preservation, and I'm delighted to host this episode celebrating Frederick Franklin, one of the most universally beloved dance figures of the 20th century. Although I had admired him from afar for many years, I didn't make personal contact with him until the early 2000s, and I was so thrilled and inspired that I invited him to introduce a screening of the wonderful documentary film Ballet Russe and engage in a pillow talk soon thereafter. We'll start with that 2006 pillow talk, which we titled Frederick Franklin Returns, and it begins with my extensive introduction recounting Mr. Franklin's pillow connections as well as his career as a whole.
Casino de Paris with the legendary music hall star Miss Dinguette. He danced in vaudeville, tap dancing as a member of the Lancashire Lads, in West End musicals, and in supper clubs before joining the Mark of a Dolan Ballet as a soloist from 1935 to 1937. In 1938, he joined the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo as premier danseur and remained a dominant artistic force in that company into the 1950s. He created roles in Léonie Massine's Gaieté Parisienne, Agnès Demille's Rodeo, and Frederick Ashton's Devil's Holiday, among many others. His legendary partnership with Alexandra Danilova led to an artistic renaissance in the company in the 1940s, and they danced together here at the Pillow in both 1946 and 1948. In 1951, he formed the Slavenska Franklin Ballet with Mia Slavenska, and they created the leading roles in Valerie Bettis's A Streetcar Named Desire. They danced together here along with Danilova in 1952. In 1959, Mr. Franklin became co-director of the Washington Ballet and performed with them here in 1960. Went on in 1962 to co-found the National Ballet, which he brought to Jacob's Pillow in 1973 and directed until the following year. Since that time, he's held a number of posts with ballet companies throughout the United States and Europe, staging the ballets of Fokine, Massine, Balanchine, and Ruth Page, as well as 19th century classics. For Dance Theater of Harlem, he created a Creole Giselle, placing the ballet in a Louisiana bayou setting, and this was filmed and broadcast on PBS. His stage career has continued to the present day, and he'll be performing with American Ballet Theater at the Metropolitan Opera House, starting on Monday night in Swan Lake. If
I couldn't believe I've done all of that. Obviously.
Now, if all of these credits are not enough to astound you, I will simply add that just last week, Mr. Franklin celebrated his 92nd birthday. I wonder if, in starting out, if we could talk a little bit about your pre-pillow history, of which there was plenty, and you had such an unusual beginning in all this work in supper clubs and in vaudeville forth. It's not the usual route for a ballet dancer.
No, when it was my turn, when I was ready to start and do things, my mother raised enough money to send me to London. And it was in 1931, and there wasn't a ballet company in England at all. There was nothing. The Jagiellev Ballet, whom I saw in Liverpool, he died. And I was supposed to go to the Pavlova, Anna Pavlova's company, but she died. And that was the beginning. I was 17 years old. But I went to London, and I saw in the paper, Boy Wanted, Paris. I thought, well, I'll go and see what happens. But there was, at this audition, there was a very well-known English dancer by the name of Harold Turner. And I thought, oh, no, this is not for you, Franklin. He'll get it. But it wasn't for his kind of dancing. It was tap dancing. And I remember I auditioned and went back the next day and auditioned again. And the lady said to me, well, where did you learn all these steps? And I just said, from you. So, and she was rather alarmed, and she said, well, we would like to engage you, and you go to Paris, and how old you are. So I lied. I said I was 18. Well, I've sent the contract home for my parents to sign. They signed it, but the moment came when I had to go to get a passport. Well, that did it, you know. But they took me, and they paid £500. I was under the jurisdiction of the English law because I was underage. And they paid the £500, and I lived with a French family. And my first star there, I was on the end of a line of 10 boys, and we did tap dancing, we did Spanish dancing, we did everything. And the first star was Josephine Baker. So, you know, I had a very good beginning.
Yeah, I should say, but an unusual one.
Yes, it was. And then that finished, and I went to London. I met, through auditions again, a very famous young lady by the name of Wendy Toy. And really, she was doing a show at Grosvenor House, the Grosvenor Gaieties, and I auditioned for her, and it was fine, and she was working then with Anton Dolin. And she said one day, Freddie, wait a moment. So she called Anton Dolin, and Wendy said, you know, he's coming to see you. Well, I thought, oh dear, there's another dilemma and terrible moment. But he was dancing with Markova in London in one of the West End theatres, and he was doing 5 shows a day. Well, now that's all your fault. The Americans invented this. England certainly didn't. And between shows, he came and saw me. And I must say, he was in a red dressing gown, full makeup, out of a taxi, and a few people behind him. And he said to me, do a few things. So I could turn rather well to the left. That's about the only thing I could do. So he said to me, can you go the other way? And I said, not very well. Oh, never mind, he said. So I did a few jumps, and then he said, Wendy, take him. And that was really the beginning of my entree into the ballet world, where I now have had a career. And it was through her. Then we danced in cabarets. I did 2 or 3 shows in London. And, you know, from there was one day when Mr. Dolin said to me, Freddie, it's about time you became serious about your art. Markova and I are having a company, and you're going to be in it. That was it. I was in it. And from then on, that's it. That's how it was.
And, you know, in many ways, that really leads to your first visit to Jacob's Pillow, because although your Pillow debut, as we have mentioned, was exactly 60 years ago this summer when you first performed here.
Yes.
But
yes.
Your first visit here was actually in 1941, 65 years ago.
Right.
And Dolin and Markova were that summer directing the Pillow. So how did that lead to?
Well, the thing was, the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo was appearing at Lewisohn Stadium in New York. And in those days, doesn't exist anymore. And Mr. Dolin and Miss Markova came to see me and with the company. And I remember saying, now, Fred, Alicia and I have taken over Jacob's Pillow. Would you like to come and sort of stay the weekend? And I said, yes. And he said, it'll cost you $10, you know. I said, that's fine, Pat. And I came here for the first time. And at that time, there was, in one of the houses, there was Lucia Chase, there was Annabelle Lyons, and there was Catherine Sergeva. And in Mr. Ted Shawn's house, there was Miss Markova and Mr. Dolin. And I slept, well, we've discovered where I slept. I don't know, somewhere.
It was over what's now the store.
That's where I was. But I had a wonderful time. And Mr. Dolin really was trying out a lot of people also for the ballet theater. But it was right here, I'll never forget, we were all assembled for a class, and he was there, and suddenly he turned and said, "Freddie, get the class." I'd never given a class in my life, and I thought, all these people. And at least she said to me, "Freddie, dear, don't worry, you will do it." She was a very calming influence in my life, I must say. And I gave my very class here, very first one. Well, so that's, in many ways, there's been a lot happening here.
Yeah, there, I should say. Well, that summer, 1941, we were looking at these photographs before, right behind you here. This newspaper, it was a full page in the New York Times, and I know that you all cannot see this that clearly, but you're welcome to come up and examine it afterwards. But in the crowd, there's a photograph taken inside the Stone Dining Room, a building that we still use today. And one of the people who is not identified there is none other than Frederick Franklin. So his visit here was really documented in the New York Times here, so we know that this is true.
You know that I've been here.
Yeah, we know that.
Well, you know, another wonderful thing happened here. There was a dancer by the name of Dwight Godwin. Mm-hmm. And here, I had just done the Frederick Ashton Ballet called Devil's Holiday, and I had a lovely solo, and it was photographed here. It was filmed here with Dwight Godwin, and it's somewhere, and I don't know whether we've got it or whether we
have
it.
We don't have it today, but we'll go looking.
Well, I don't know, and there's one of Markova, I know, doing something, and right out, it was a wonderful hot summer, I'll never forget it, we did all of these things here, and I had a wonderful time. I loved being here. I came here, and there are a couple of places I remember, because it's all so different now. And wonderfully so, I must say.
Yeah, but many things still also the same. And you seem to really respond to when we were in the Tea Garden area.
Oh,
and
right.
All of that looked very familiar.
Very familiar. And it was here, I must say, another thing happened in my life. The Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo had been called upon to make two movies at Warner Brothers in Hollywood. And we were all very excited. And I remember coming here one weekend and telling everybody, and Pat and Delicia and the kids, that I was off to Hollywood to make these movies. And it sounded very glamorous in those days. And I remember writing back to Alicia and telling about what happened with when we were out there and with, you know, filming. And we used to have Errol Flynn and Betty Davis and Alexis Smith, and they'd come and see this madness that was going on on another lot. All the Russians going crazy, and it was quite an event. And I wrote it all to the kids here. It was lovely.
Great. Where are those letters, by the way?
Oh, who knows?
Well, I wonder, the next time that you were here was 1946, I believe, with Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo, and that was the year of the bells.
Oh,
you were starting to tell me something
we were here with Ruth Page and Asami Noguchi did the decor.
That's what this photograph behind me is of. The bells, and again, you can come up and look at it afterwards, but this is Frederick Franklin standing in the center on the set that Noguchi designed and in costumes that Noguchi designed also.
Yeah, the costumes. I had what Ruth Page used to call the shower curtain, and I had a wire frame here, and I had wire that went up there and a bar across the back and down. At the back, there was a long panel of silk which went to the floor, and I had a phenomenal entrance. That church there, I had an entrance through the church with this outfit. Well, let me tell you, when we did it in New York at City Center, I really got the bird. That means they laughed at me a lot. Coming out with this flowing thing at the back. But actually, it was a wonderful ballet. But we rehearsed here.
So this thing, this panel that we see behind you, you're actually wearing that?
Okay. Fortunately, I got rid of it during the ballet. But what we rehearsed here in the theater, and one, I think we'd learned it, and we were doing a run-through, and suddenly Miss Danilova hurt her foot, and we were all very distressed, and she never actually did the ballet. Ruth Anna Boris did it after, but it was, again, a happening here, you know, in 46.
And there are pictures of it. There is a picture of you and Danilova. Must have been done for publicity purposes, maybe, because
right.
There is a photo
there
of it.
Is there, and there are, there's one, I know, with another one, a group one with her, mm-hmm. with us here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very historical and hysterical here.
Exactly. Well, and then just 2 years later, you came back with Danilova, and you there were two different programs that you danced, because that summer, according to our programs, it said that the ballet department at Jacob's Pillow was under the direction of the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo.
Yes.
And so there were several weeks of programming, and 1 week you and Danilova performed the pas de deux from Coppelia and the waltz from Gaieté Parisienne. And then the next week, you did the pas de deux from Raimonda, then a piece, a solo, called El Menesteroso.
Oh, that was from, yes, that was, my lovely Spanish solo. Yeah, I remember that very well.
And then the waltz from Vaudanue.
The first time that we came, rather the first that you've mentioned, I had an injury with my knee. And it was Madame Danilova, Shura, said, you know, friend, we go to the place called the Pillow. I said, Shura, what are you talking about? She said, you know, up by the Pillow. I said, you mean Jacobs? Yes, where the Jacobs live. And this is what went on with her. She was one, bless her heart. And she said, you know, we go see how you are on the stage. I said, well, all right, we will. And I remember. And I was getting back after the injury, and I came, and we did it. We did the performance, and I distinctly remember coming off and talking with people. And there was gentleman standing near me, and I was huffing and puffing. And he said, in sort of a funny English, he said, you know, I can help you. And I said, oh. And he said, if you do this and breathe and you do that and something else, I started and it sort of worked. And I said, you must excuse me, but what is your name? And he said, my name is Pilates. And Mr. Pilates was here with a therapy. And he was wonderful. And I was one of his pupils. But it was really that I remember that so distinctly.
Well, we go on from that in terms of when you performed. The next time that we have records of was 1952, which was after you had formed the Slovenska Franklin Ballet with Mia Slovenska.
Oh, yes.
And then, but you were billed here as Ballet Variant.
That's right. Mia had a small company, and it had been decided in New York that Mia and I by that time, I was a little tired of the Ballet Russe, and I felt it was time for a change. So I gave the company a six-month notice that I would be leaving. And Mia said, well, look, you know, we've danced together. Why don't you come? We'll have a small company. And it sounded rather nice. And we talked about it. And it had been decided that we would do, in our new ballet company, we would do a streetcar, the streetcar named Desire. But that's another story at the moment. And then she said, well, why don't we all get going, and you, and we'll ask Shura, Madame Danilova, and the three of us toured with her ballet variant and did a couple of Mia's ballets, you know? So that was another thing here.
Right.
Yes,
that
was lovely.
So that was 1952, and you and, well, there was a Nutcracker suite,
right.
That you staged.
No, Mia did.
Mia did it.
We danced in it. I did a couple of numbers.
Right. Except for according to the program, it said that the Danse Arabe was choreographed by La Mary.
Yes, it was.
The Arabian dance.
Right.
That was unusual for a ballet company. Then you also danced the Don Quixote pas de deux with Mia.
With Mia, right. We did that here.
Yeah, and we have a film of that. And then you also danced the waltz again from Gaieté Parisienne with Danilova.
Danilova, right.
At this point in the chronology, I'd like to splice in a lovely moment from a pillow talk we hosted the very next season in 2007, prompted by the publication of a book that Franklin co-authored with the dance scholar Leslie Norton. During the Q&A of that talk, one of the audience members stepped up to the microphone and identified herself as Rochelle Zide Booth, who had known Mr. Franklin when she was a young corps dancer with the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo. She also happened to have served on the Pillow faculty for 5 years during the 1970s, during which time she was my teacher.
Hi, I'm Rochelle Zide Booth, and I'm in the film too. My first year in the Ballet Russe, Mr. Franklin was a ballet master and principal dancer. And what I'd like to find out is how you were able to separate yourself into those two roles, because you were on stage every night dancing principal roles, and you were responsible for the entire repertory of the company. He taught us, I think our first tour we had 18 ballets.
Yeah.
And we learned them all in a very short period of time. It was a whole new company, 1954.
Oh,
whole
yes,
new company. And you taught everybody everything in one studio. We didn't have many.
One studio.
Palm Gardens in New York.
Yes.
And we were 5 hours a day, 6 days a week. And we learned, my first week, we learned five ballets from Mr. Franklin. So I want to know, how were you able to get the energy together to then be able to go out on stage every night and dance principal roles?
Well, I think, really, Shelley, what it was, a lot of you gave me a lot of stuff, you know. You gave to me stuff, all of you, all of that company. And I saw that they were willing and they wanted, and that helped me get it out of me. But when I think back, I don't know. They paid me and I had to do it. I just don't know. There were moments when I thought, oh dear, what was going to happen? But I don't know, the responsibility of it and then the performing responsibility of all of that too. I can't answer the questions. Well, we're all here to tell the tale. I think that's it. That's about it. Just leave it as it is.
To pick up Franklin's pillow connections once again, let's hear from the 2006 pillow talk about two different engagements with companies based in Washington, D.C. in the 1960s and 70s.
So the next time you came to the pillow was 1960, and that was with the Washington Ballet, which you were co-directing with Mary Day.
That's right, yes.
But you were not only co-director, but you were also still dancing at that point.
You danced
in Ondine, that was choreographed by Mary Day.
Right. I wasn't dancing, I was really partnering, But, and it was a lovely ballet here that we did, and I remember it very well. And on the same program, I did my own ballet tribute here.
Mm-hmm. Etalage.
Etalage, it was known as then, right. Mm-hmm. Yes, my good. Do you have any...
I don't know that we have any record of that. I'm not going to be able to pull out
these bag of tricks.
For everything, but we certainly have the program, and I'll have to look at maybe some photographs too. We'll see.
I think that was one of the very first ballets I ever tried to do,
and that must have been close to the time that 1960. Of course, you've never retired from dancing, but were you at that point still doing major roles?
Yes, I was. I was, yes.
This is a very long career for a dancer. You were 46 at the time?
Yeah, yes, you've added very well.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So, no, because when we had the National Ballet, mm-hmm. I did the poet in Sonnambula.
Oh.
So I was on still.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like this.
And you directed the National Ballet up through 1974, and in 1973 you brought them to Jacob's Pillow, and they and the company did the Story of Cinderella, which was Ben Stevenson's ballet.
Did we do that here?
We did that here, believe it or not, on our tiny stage. There was a program note that said that it had been adapted somewhat. I'm sure it had to have been adapted quite a bit. Quite a bit.
Well, I'd forgotten all about that one.
That was 1973, and that was the last time that you had come here until today.
Oh, my. And it is very different, believe me.
Well, as I said there, Frederick Franklin never had another performance engagement at the Pillow after 1973. But at the time of this conversation, he was still performing at the age of 92. And I want to share this delightful anecdote, which I must tell you is also available for viewing online with the link available in the episode notes. It's a priceless story, and I wanted to make sure and include it here as well.
I have now been with ABT. This is my 10th year, and it started out Kevin McKenzie, the artistic director, who was with me in company in the National Ballet in the 60s. He's the artistic director, and he called me one day and said, Fred, we're going to do a new Coppelia. Would you come and do it? And yes, I said, yes, of course, I'd love to. In fear and trembling, I put Coppelia on for ABT. And then I got to know a lot of the people in it. And there was one moment when they were talking about something coming up for the following season. This is about 8 years ago. And lovely Georgina Parkin, I was talking with her, and she said, we're going to do, I said, what are you doing? She said, we're going to do La Sylphide. And I just said, I've done that with Elsa Marianne von Rosen, and I did The Witch. Oh, she said. So she immediately goes to Kevin and says, Fred did The Witch. Why can't you do it with us? So that was the beginning of my stage career with ABT. So I started there, and then during that time, David Richardson, who was then the co-artistic director, said to me one day, he said, now, Fred, you'll be on as the friar in Romeo and Juliet on Friday. I said, just a moment. I said, what about the choreography? Oh, he said, now, come here. He got a piece of paper, and he wrote, now, you enter, you go to the right, and you kneel. Then you get up, and then he comes on and lifts you up, and then she comes on, and then you bless them, you go off. And then there's the next sentence. You come on, and you have the vial, and you go out, you hear a noise. You come on, and she comes, and you, oh, poor dear, give her the vial. She does that, and goes off. That was the rehearsal I had. Well, I must say, I managed somehow, but I'll never forget, I was standing waiting to go on, and I'm not that sure of the music. So Georgina was with me, and she said, well, she said, darling, here you go, and they opened the curtains. Well, there were some very nice people who'd remembered me, and they applauded. The ballet flew out of my head. I knelt, and I thought, somebody will pick me up. And then we'll get on from there. And that's how it all happened. And I've been picked up all this since then.
Well, and you're going to be doing The Friar again?
I have a big repertory now. I've just done three performances of The Charlatan in Petrushka. And on this coming Monday, I do The Tutor in Swan Lake, which was filmed. It's all on film there. And it's a very nice part in the first act. And I'm on four times during the week. Then I have a week to recover. And then I go on and do four performances of The Friar in Romeo and Juliet. And I must say, I very much enjoy doing all of it.
I'd like to close with one more clip from the 2007 Pillow Talk in which Frederick Franklin is asked about his future. Alas, that future is now in the past, as he died in 2013, just 1 month before his 99th birthday. It's wonderful to hear the optimism and spirit that he was still exuding at the age of 93.
The future. Now, look. I'm all right at the moment. I'm all in one piece. If you know, I can still hear a little bit now and again. I have trouble. I see very well. I'm on the stage. I can walk back and forth. I walk every day. I walk a lot. I've had a triple bypass. I've had all kinds of injuries, but I'm out. I'm over them all. And here I am. So the future, I think the gentleman up there will really have to decide that. But as long as I can, and I must say, it's not bad being 93. I mean, you'll all get there. I know you will. And enjoy it just like I am. All right?
That's it for this episode of Pillow Voices. Thank you for joining us today. On behalf of Jacob's Pillow, we look forward to sharing more dance with you through the films, essays, and podcasts at danceinteractive.jacobspillow.org, and of course, through live experiences during our festival and throughout the year. Special thanks to the National Endowment for the Arts for helping launch this podcast series. Please subscribe to Pillow Voices wherever you get your podcasts and visit us again soon, either online or on site.